In a second, the despair, the hopelessness, the sense of forgetting things or missing the point somehow, all gets transformed into rage. When she sees Lindsay, she stops and opens her mouth, going straight into her, "You're a bitch," routine. But I don't even let the first word escape from her mouth before I'm charging forward, grabbing her arm, and half-dragging her backward down the hallway. She's too surprised to fight me. I pull her into the nearest bathroom. "Out!" I order two girls who are primping in front of the mirror, and slam the door and lock it. When I turn around to face her, she's staring at me like I'm the psychopath. "What are you doing?" She must misunderstand my question. "It's a party," she says with soft insistence. When she's not busy freaking out and calling me a bitch, she has a nice voice, musical like Elodie's. "I'm allowed to be here like everybody else." "No." I shake my head, pressing fingers to my temples to keep them from pounding. "I mean, what are you really doing? Why are you here?" Her eyes flutter to the doorknob behind me. I move over so it's wedged into my lower back. If she wants to get out, she'll have to move me out of the way. Apparently, she doesn't like her chances because she takes a long, slow breath. "I came to tell you something. You and Lindsay and Elodie and Allie."
"Oh, yeah? What's that?"
"You're a bitch," she says quietly. Not like an accusation at all, more like something she's sorry about. At the same time she says it, I say it with her. "I'm a bitch." She stares at me. "Listen, Juliet." I rake my hands through my hair. "I know we haven't always been nice to you or whatever, and I really feel bad about it. I do." I try to gauge what she's thinking, but it's like something has shut down behind her eyes. A button switching off, and she just stands there staring at me dully. I rush on. "The thing is, we never really meant anything by it, you know? I don't think we really thought about it. It's just the kind of thing that happens. People used to make fun of me all the time." She's making me nervous just staring like that, and I lick my lips. "All the time. And, like, I don't think it's really because people are mean or bad or whatever. I just think... I'm fighting to find the words. Memories are colliding in my head, the sound of people singing as I walked down the hall, the smell of ice cream on Lindsay's breath the day we threw Beth's tampons out the window, riding a horse through a blur of trees. I just think that people don't think. They don't know. I didn't know. I feel pretty proud of myself for getting all of that out. But Juliet hasn't moved or smiled or even freaked out. She's so still she could be carved out of stone. Finally, a little tremor goes through her, a personal earthquake, and her eyes seem to focus on me. "You haven't always been that nice to me," she says dully, and my stomach sinks. She didn't hear a word I said. Yeah. And I'm sorry about that." Her eyelids flutter. "In seventh grade, you and Lindsay stole all my clothes from the locker room, so I had to walk around in my sweaty gym clothes for the rest of the day. Then you called me Stinky Sykes."
I'm sorry, I don't remember that."
The way she's staring at me is awful, like she's seeing in and through and beyond me to some void. "That was before you came up with Psycho. Of course." Juliet's voice has lost its musical quality. It's completely toneless. She raises her arm and mimes slashing a knife through the air, emitting a series of high-pitched shrieks that send chills up and down my arms. And for a moment, I think maybe she is crazy. Then she drops her arm. "Real funny. Psycho killer. Qu'est-ce que c'est?" Catchy. "People used to tell this really dumb joke about me, kind of sing it when I walked by. What's red and white and weird all over?" I'm hoping to make her laugh or twitch or something, but she just keeps staring at me with that dumb animal look on her face, a blank. "I never sang it," she says. And then, like she's forced to keep reciting everything we ever did, continues.
You took pictures of me when I was showering.
That was Lindsay, I say automatically, getting more and more uncomfortable. If she would get angry, it would be one thing, but it's like she's not even seeing me. Like she's just reading off a list she's looked at a million times.
You posted the pictures all over school, where teachers could see.
We took them down in like an hour. I'm ashamed as soon as I say the words, as though the fact that we took them down makes it better.
You hacked into my Yahoo account. You published my private emails.
That wasn't us, I say quickly, feeling a rush of relief that this at least was not our fault. To this day, I'm not sure who did hack her account and circulate email exchanges between Juliet and some guy named Path to Pain 118 she'd obviously met in a chat room. There were dozens of emails, all of them long rants about how much high school sucked and how awful everybody was. The hacker had forwarded the emails to almost everyone in school after giving them a new subject line: Future School Shooters of America. I shiver thinking about how easy it is to be totally wrong about people, to see one tiny part of them and confuse it for the whole, to see the cause and think it's the effect, or vice versa. And though I've now been at Kent's house 5 times in 6 days, I feel disoriented, confused by the bright bathroom light and Juliet's impassive face and the sounds of the party coming through the door. Juliet keeps going on like I didn't even speak. You started the rumor that I lost my virginity for a pack of cigarettes. Allie. That was Allie. I can't say it. It doesn't matter. Anyway, it was us. It was all of us. Everyone who repeated the story and whispered slut and made a smoker's hacking cough whenever she walked by.
I don't even smoke.
She says this with a smile, like this is the funniest thing in the world, like this, her whole life, is one big joke.
Juliet, my sister, heard that rumor. She told my parents.
Finally, she loses it a little, balling her hands into fists and squeezing them against her thighs.
I've never even kissed anyone.
This comes out as a fierce whisper, a confession. And the intensity of it, the sadness and regret, makes a black well of anger break somewhere inside of me.
I know, okay? I know we did horrible things. I know we've been shitty and things are bad and...
I break off, the words getting tangled in my throat. I'm on the verge of tears, full of blind fury that hits me like a cloud, blots out everything but a single burning point of frustration. I can't make her see. Can't make her see that I'm trying to make things right. I feel like I'm watching both of our lives swirl down the drain, mine and hers, wrapped around each other. What I'm saying is, I want to make it up to you. I'm trying to apologize. Things are going to get better. She presses her lips together, staring at me, mute and white-faced. And I have to tense every muscle in my arms to keep from reaching out and grabbing her shoulders, shaking her. I mean, I'm going on blindly now, groping, grabbing at words and ideas as they come buzzing up to me through my anger, trying to get through to her. You got those roses today, right? Like a whole bunch of them? An enormous shudder goes through her, and now a light snaps on in her eyes again. But instead of gratitude, there's hatred burning there.
I knew it. I knew it was you.
Her voice is so full of rage and pain, I rear back like she's hit me.
What was that? Another one of your little jokes?
Her reaction is so unexpected, it takes me a few seconds to think of a response.
What? No, that wasn't... Poor little psycho.
Juliet narrows her eyes, almost hissing at me. No friends, no roses. Let's screw with her one more time.
I didn't want to screw with you.
I have no idea what's happening or how things have gone so badly wrong.
It was supposed to be nice.
I don't know that she even hears me. She leans closer.
So what was the plan? What were you going to do with the secret admirer crap? Bribe one of your friends so he'd pretend to like me, ask me out, maybe even go to prom, and then what? On the night we're supposed to go, he just won't show up, and it'll be so goddamn funny if I freak out, if I go crazy, if I cry or break down in the hallways when I see him in school. She jerks away. Sorry to disappoint you, but you're repeating yourselves. Been there, done that. Eighth grade, spring fling, Andrew Roberts. She slumps forward as though her speech has exhausted her, the anger and the burning light disappearing simultaneously, all the expression going out of her face, her hands uncurling. Or maybe you didn't have a plan, she says, this time quietly, almost sweetly. Maybe there was no point to it at all. Maybe you just wanted to remind me that I have nobody. No friends, no secret admirers. Maybe next year, but probably not. Right? She smiles at me again, and it's much worse than her anger. By this point, I'm so frustrated and bewildered, I have to fight back tears. I swear, Juliet, that wasn't the point. I thought it would be nice. I thought it would make you feel better. Make me feel better? She repeats the words as though she's never heard them before, and now her eyes have a dreamy, faraway look. Every trace of anger and emotion is gone. She looks peaceful, even, and I'm struck by how beautiful she is, up close. Just like a supermodel, with that ghostly pale skin and those huge blue eyes, the color of the sky very early in the morning. You don't know me, she says in little more than a whisper. You never knew me, and you can't make me better. Nobody can make me better. This reminds me of what I said to Kent only 2 days ago. I don't think I can be fixed. But now I know I was wrong. Everyone can be fixed. It has to be that way. It's the only thing that makes sense. I'm trying to figure out a way to tell Juliet this, to convince her of it, but very calmly, and with that floating grace she's always had, she puts her hand on one of my arms and moves me gently but firmly out of the way, and I find myself stepping aside and letting her reach for the door handle. The tears are pushing at the back of my throat, and I'm still struggling for words. And the whole time, it's like her face is growing paler and paler, glowing almost, like the sheer white point of a flame. And I have this idea that I'm already seeing her sputter out, her life flickering in front of me, a TV on static. She pauses with her hand on the door, staring directly in front of her. You know, I used to be friends with Lindsay. She's still speaking in that horrible, calm voice as though she's talking from a distance of miles and miles. When we were younger, we did everything together. I still have a friendship necklace she gave me, one of those hearts split down the middle. When you put them together, the necklace spelled best friends forever. I want to ask what happened. Why they stopped being friends, but the words are stuck behind a lump in my throat. And I'm scared of interrupting. As long as Juliet's talking to me, she's safe. That was right before her parents got divorced. Juliet shoots a quick glance in my direction, but her eyes seem to go directly over my face without actually registering it. She was so sad, all the time. I used to go to her house for sleepovers, and her parents would be arguing so badly we'd have to hide under her bed and stuff pillows everywhere to muffle the sound. She called it building a fort. She was always like that, you know, always trying to make the best of things. But when she thought I was asleep, she would cry and cry and cry. She started having nightmares, too. Really bad ones. She'd wake up screaming in the middle of the night. Juliet's staring at the door again, smiling a little. I wish I could walk back into her memories and see what she's seeing, fix whatever is broken there. She started to wet her bed again, you know, because everything was so bad with her mom and dad. She was humiliated, of course. She swore me to secrecy, said she'd never speak to me again if I told anybody. We used to wake up in the morning and some of the pillows in the fort would be damp. I would pretend not to notice. One morning I came into the bathroom to brush my teeth and she was sitting in the tub scrubbing a pillow with so much bleach it made my eyes sting. She must have been scrubbing for half an hour. The pillow was all white, splotched, and ruined, and her fingers were raw and red. They were burned, almost. But it's like she couldn't even see it. She just wanted it to be clean. I close my eyes, feeling the floor sway underneath me, remembering coming into the bathroom of Rosalita's and seeing Lindsay on her knees, the chunks of food in the toilet. The mixture of shame and anger and defiance on her face. One time, the fighting got so bad, we even ran away from her house. We were only 7 or 8, but we walked all the way to my house. It was March, pretty cold. The plan was for Lindsay to move into my room. I wasn't going to tell anyone, just keep her safe and bring her food. Mostly she wanted gummy bears and Snickers bars. She loved chocolate then, and candy. Anything sweet, really. Without meaning to, I let out a little strangled sound. I don't know if I can listen anymore. I have the feeling that this is it. This bathroom, this story, that this is the root and bud of it all, the beginning and the end. But Juliet keeps going in that strange, measured tone as though we have all the time in the world. Of course, it didn't work. We got upstairs and into the bedroom. But then we started arguing about who should sleep in the little trundle bed and who should get the big one, and my mom heard us. She was horrified that we'd walked all that way. She was screaming and crying that we could have been kidnapped or killed or whatever. I remember being really embarrassed. Juliet turns her hands upward, stares at her palms. It was nothing compared to Lindsay's freakout, though, when my mom said she had to go home. I've never heard anyone scream that loudly. She's silent for so long, I think she's done. Her words keep buzzing in my head, flitting around and arranging themselves like clues in a crossword puzzle. She was always like that, you know, always trying to make the best of things. She must have been scrubbing for half an hour. Her fingers were raw and red. I feel like I'm on the verge of understanding something I'm not sure I want to know. The room feels tiny and stifling. There's a crushing weight on my chest. I'm tempted to make a run for it, push past her into the party and go get a beer and forget about Juliet, forget about everything. But I'm rooted where I am. I can't move. I keep seeing the endless darkness of my dream rising in front of me. I can't go back to it. It's funny when you think about it, Juliet says. We did everything together. Lindsay and me, we even joined Girl Scouts together. It was her idea. I didn't want to do all that, cookies and campfires and stuff. We went away on a camping trip at the beginning of 5th grade. We slept in the same tent, of course. I watch Juliet's hands. They're trembling ever so slightly, but so quickly you can barely see it, like the wings of a hummingbird. Out of the corner of her eye, Juliet catches me looking, and she brings her hands down to her thighs, gracefully but with finality. You remember the name they gave me in 5th grade, right? The name Lindsay gave me? Mellow Yellow? She shakes her head. I used to dream that name. I heard it so often. Sometimes I forgot what my real name was. She turns to me and her face is radiant, almost glowing, gorgeous. The funny thing is, it wasn't even me. Lindsay was the one who wet her sleeping bag. In the morning, the whole tent smelled, but when Ms. Bridges came in and asked what had happened, Lindsay just pointed her finger at me and screamed, "She did it!" I'll never forget her face when she screamed it. She did it! Terrified. Like I was a wild dog and I was going to bite her. I press back against the door, grateful for something to lean on. It makes perfect sense. Of course, it all makes perfect sense now. Lindsay's anger, the way she always held up her fingers in the shape of a cross to ward Juliet Sykes off. She doesn't hate her. She's afraid of her. Juliet Sykes, the keeper of Lindsay's oldest, maybe her worst, secret. And it all seems absurd now, the chance and randomness of it. One person shoots up and the other spirals downward, random and meaningless. As simple as being in the right place or the wrong place or however you want to look at it. As simple as getting a craving for Diet Pepsi one day at a pool party and getting swept away. As simple as not saying no. "Why didn't you say anything?" I ask, even though I already know the answer. My voice comes out hoarse from the effort of swallowing back tears. Juliet shrugs. "She was my best friend, you know. She was always so sad back then." Juliet makes a noise that could be a laugh or a whimper. "Besides," she says more quietly, "I thought it would pass." "Juliet," I start to say. She shakes her shoulders like she's brushing off the weight of everything, the conversation, the past. "It doesn't matter now," she says quickly, and just like that, she snaps the door open and slips out. "Juliet!" There's a huge clot of people standing by the door, and when I come out, I'm pressed backward momentarily as two juniors scuffle for the bathroom, both of them yelling drunk, "I was here first! No, I was! You just got here!" A few people give me dirty looks, and then Bridget McGuire charges past all of them, face red and blotchy and tear-streaked. When she sees me, she sobs out, "You!" But she doesn't finish her sentence, just swoops around the juniors and locks herself in the bathroom. "Jesus Christ, not again!" someone yells. "I'm gonna pee my pants!" one of the juniors moans, crossing her legs and hopping up and down. Alex Lament is right behind Bridget. He pushes up to the bathroom door and begins rapping on it, calling for her to come out. I still haven't moved. I'm pressed up against the wall, penned in by people, paralyzed by how wrong everything is. I remember a story I once heard about drowning, that when you fall into cold water, it's not that you drown right away, but that the cold disorients you and makes you think that down is up and up is down. So you may be swimming, swimming, swimming for your life in the wrong direction, all the way toward the bottom until you sink. That's how I feel. As though everything has been turned around.
"You're really unbelievable."
I'm suddenly aware that Alex is talking to me. His lips are curled back, showing all his teeth.
"You know what you are?"
He puts one hand on either side of my head so he's blocking me in. I can see sweat on his forehead and smell weed and beer on his breath.
"You, Samantha Kingston, are a bitch."
Hearing that jolts me, wakes me up. I have to focus. Juliet is off somewhere in the woods, in the cold. She's probably making for the road. I can still find her, talk to her, get her to see. I put both hands on Alex's chest and shove him. He stumbles backward. "I've heard it before," I say. "Trust me." I force my way through the hallway and I'm halfway down the stairs when someone calls my name. I stop dead so that the people behind me bump each other like dominoes and start cursing at me. "Jesus Christ, what?" I whirl around and see Kent, who leapfrogs over the banister and swings down onto the stairs, nearly taking out Hannah Gordon.
"You came."
He lands two stairs above me, a little out of breath. His eyes are bright and happy. His hair is falling over his forehead, picking up light from the Christmas bulbs strung everywhere. Bits of it the color of chocolate and some of it caramel. I have an almost uncontrollable urge to reach over and push it back behind his ears. "I said I would, didn't I?" There's a dull pain unfurling in my stomach. All I wanted all night, all day, was to be standing this close to him, and now I have no time. "Listen, Kent,
I thought you were probably here when I saw Lindsay at all. You guys usually travel in packs, you know. But then I was looking for you."
He stops himself, blushes.
Not actively looking, really just kind of perusing the crowd, you know. And I was walking around socializing. That's what you're supposed to do when you host, socialize. So I was just keeping an eye out.
Kent. My voice comes out sharp, mean, and I close my eyes just for a second, imagining what it felt like to lie with him in total darkness, imagining the touch of his hand on mine. It suddenly occurs to me how impossible all of this is with me and him. When I open my eyes, he's just standing there, waiting, a little crease in his forehead. So adorable and normal, the kind of guy who deserves the kind of girl who wears cashmere sweaters and is really good at crossword puzzles or plays the violin or volunteers at soup kitchens. Someone nice and normal and honest. The pain in my stomach intensifies as though something's caught in there, snapping away at my insides. I could never be good enough for him. Even if I lived the same day into infinity, I could never be good enough. I'm sorry, I force myself to say. I can't talk to you right now. But he tucks his hands into the cuffs of his shirt, looking uncertain. I'm sorry. It's better, I almost say, but I figure there's no point. I don't look back either, even though I can feel him watching me. Outside, I pull on my fleece, zipping it all the way up to my chin. The rain drives down my neck and spots my leggings immediately. At least tonight I'm wearing flats. I stick to the driveway. The pavement is icy, and I have to reach out and brace myself against the cars as I pass. The cold tears at my lungs, and it's so strange, but in the middle of all this, I have the stupidest, simplest thought. I should really jog more. And as soon as I think it, I almost come undone, torn with a dual desire to laugh and to cry. But the thought of Juliet crouching by Route 9, watching the cars whiz past, waiting for Lindsay, keeps me going. Eventually, the sounds of the party drop away, and then it's silent except for the driving rain, like thousands of tiny shards of glass falling on the pavement, and my footsteps ringing out. It's dark, too, and I have to slow down, moving from one car to the next with my hands, the metal so cold under my fingers it feels hot. When I find the tank, hulking above all the others, I fish through my bag until my fingers close around cold metal and a rhinestone-encrusted keychain that reads, "Bad Girl." Lindsay's car keys. I blow air out of my cheeks. This, at least, is a good thing. There's no way Lindsay can leave without me. Her car won't be on the road tonight, no matter how long Juliet waits. Still, I lock and double-lock the doors. Then the cars drop away too, and I shuffle forward at a crawl, mentally cursing myself for not bringing a flashlight, cursing February 12th, cursing Juliet Sykes. I see now that the roses were a stupid idea, an insult, even. I think of Juliet and Lindsay all those years ago in a tent, when Lindsay raised a finger and pointed, terrified, humiliated, and it all began. And for years, Juliet kept Lindsay's secret. I thought it would pass. At the same time, the more I think about it, the rain beating furiously, the angrier I get. This is my life. The whole big, sprawling mess of my life in all its possibilities, first kisses and last kisses and college and apartments and marriage and fights and apologies and happiness brought to a point, a second, an edge of a second, razored off in that final moment by Juliet's last act. Her revenge against us, against me. The farther I get from the party, the more I think, no, it can't happen this way. No matter what we did, it can't happen this way. Then the driveway opens up suddenly and Route 9 is there, shining ahead of me like a river, liquid silver lit up by pools of light. I don't even realize I've been holding my breath until I exhale and I'm gasping, grateful for the light. I wipe the rain out of my eyes and turn left, scanning the edge of the woods for Juliet. A little part of me is hoping that talking to me did make her feel better. Maybe she went home, after all, maybe it meant something. At the same time, the way that she spoke in that low, flat voice comes back to me, and I know that wherever she was in that bathroom, it wasn't with me. She was lost somewhere, trapped in a fog, maybe of memories. Maybe of all the things that could have happened differently. A car roars behind me, making me jump. On the landing, I lose my footing and go on hands and knees to the ice as the car speeds by, followed closely by a second car, its engine as loud as thunder. Then honking, waves of sound rolling toward me, getting louder and louder. I look up and see the headlights of a car bearing down on me. I try to move and can't. I try to scream and can't. I'm frozen, the headlights growing as big as moons, floating there. At the last second, the car swerves a little, passing so close to me I can feel the heat of the engine and smell the exhaust and hear a line of music pumping from the radio. Light it, blaze it, tear it up. Then it's gone, still honking, passing away into the night as the bass from the speakers grows dimmer and dimmer, a distant pulse. My palms are cut up from the pavement and my heart is pounding so quickly, I'm pretty sure it's going to leap out of my chest. Slowly, shaking, I stand up. Another car passes on the other side of the road, this one at a crawl, water from its tires pinwheeling in both directions. And then, 50 feet ahead of me, I see a figure in white emerge from the woods, unfolding from a crouch like a long, pale flower. Juliet. I start going toward her, slowly now, trying to avoid the slick patches of dark ice. She stands there, perfectly still, like she doesn't even feel the rain. At a certain point, she even lifts up her arms, parallel to the ground, as though preparing to take a dive off the high board. There's something beautiful and terrifying about seeing her in that position. It reminds me of when I was little and we would go to church on Christmas and Easter, and I was always afraid to look at the pulpit, where there was a wooden statue of Jesus mounted on the cross. Juliet! She doesn't respond. I'm not sure if she doesn't hear or is just ignoring me. I'm 15 feet away. Then 10. There's a low rumbling behind me. I turn and see a big truck bearing down through the darkness. Again, I have a random thought. He should totally have his license suspended. He's going way too fast. And when I turn around again, I see that Juliet is staring up the road, tensed, arms at her thighs. And she reminds me of something, but it takes me a second to realize what it is. Just like it takes me a second to realize what's going on. She looks like a dog about to go after a bird. And then everything clicks together. And as she begins to move, a white blur, I'm moving too, running as fast as I can and closing the distance between us as she's sprinting out across the nearest lane. The truck blasts its horn, a sound so large it seems to fill the air with vibration. And then I slam into her with all my weight, and we roll, tumbling backward into the woods. I'm screaming, and she's screaming, and pain blooms in my shoulder. I roll over onto my back, the black branches overhead a thick net. What are you doing? Juliet's yelling, and when I sit up, her face has finally lost its composure and is twisted with anger. What the hell are you doing? What am I doing? My anger flares up, too. What are you doing? Jumping in front of random trucks? I thought the whole point was to wait for Lindsay. Lindsay? Lindsay Edgecombe? Juliet's anger drops away and she looks completely confused. She brings her hands up to her head, squeezing. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm suddenly uncertain. I thought, you know, like this was your big revenge. Juliet laughs, but there's no humor in it. Revenge? She shakes her head, and again that veil seems to drop over her face. Sorry, Sam. For once, this isn't about you. She stands up, not bothering to wipe off the thick tracks of mud and leaves that are clinging to her. Now please, leave me alone. My head is spinning and I'm having trouble focusing on her, like we're separated by miles instead of a few feet. The rain is coming down harder now, jagged pellets of it. Little snatches of things are whirling around in my head. Lindsay patting the hood of the tank proudly, saying, I could go head to head with an 18-wheeler and never feel it. The owner of Dunkin' Donuts calling out, That's not a car, it's a truck. The randomness of things, the way everything can change in a second, the right place at the right time, or at the wrong time. Time. That enormous truck coming at us, its big metal grill shining like teeth, the impression of lights and hugeness. The only thing you can see, headlights, size, a sense of power. Not revenge. Chance. Stupid, dumb, blind chance. Just a part of the strange mechanism of the world with its fits and coughs and starts and random collisions. But why? I struggled to my feet. Why did you come here? What was the point? She doesn't look at me, but she shrugs slightly.
There was no point, really. I just wanted to say it. I was always afraid to say it before what I really thought of you. I'm not afraid anymore. Of you. Of anybody. Of anything. I'm not even afraid of...
She breaks off, but I know what she was going to say. Not even afraid of dying. But I know what she's saying isn't totally true. Her decision to come to the party was more than that. Things are clicking into place, making a horrible kind of sense. She needed us here, needed that final push. I close my eyes against the memory of a wet and stumbling Juliet being shoved from person to person like a pinball. And tonight, I guess she just needed to tell her story. Needed to remember how bad things have been. I wonder if the day when we all slept over at Lindsay's, the day that things ended differently for her, the day that they ended alone, with a gun, it took her longer to work up the courage. If she came to the party unnoticed, ignored, and found she didn't have the strength to go through with it. If later that night she sat and stared at the gun in her lap and conjured up the faces of all the people who'd tormented her over the years. Vicky Hallinan's face hovers in the darkness suddenly, twisted into a grimace, and I snap my eyes open. Maybe before you die, it's your ghosts that you see. This isn't the way, I say weakly, feeling like the rain has seeped into my brain and made it soggy and useless. I can't remember anything I was planning to say to her. I repeat it a little louder. This isn't the way.
Please, Juliet says quietly. I just want to be alone.
What about your family? I say, my voice rising hysterically as I realize I'm losing her again, losing my chance. What about your sister? She doesn't answer me. She's staring at the road, still. The rain has soaked her shirt so I can see her shoulder blades jutting out of her back like the wings of a baby bird. And I think of the moment when Allie's mom came into the den and told us,
Juliet Sykes shot herself.
And I thought it was so wrong that she, of all people, should have jumped or leaped or fallen through the sky. I again have the fantasy I did then, that she'll suddenly sprout wings and go soaring up into the air, out of harm's way. The road has been unusually clear of traffic, but now from both directions I make out the growl of engines. Loud ones, big ones. Juliet. I take a step forward and grab her arm tightly. I can't let you do this. She turns to me, staring at me with eyes so empty it takes my breath away. They're pools, liquid, nothing. Looking at her reminds me of that stitched together mask with the holes cut away for eyes. Monstrous, deformed, patched together with eyes that look into and look out at nothing. I'm so startled, I loosen my grip. There's a roaring in my ears, and I dimly have a sense of cars, but I'm transfixed. I can't stop staring at her.
It's too late, she says.
And in that second, when I'm not holding on tightly enough, she wrenches away from me and hurtles onto the road just as two vans converge, about to pass each other, and all I see is the shine of metal and something white suddenly launched into the air, and for a second, I feel an overwhelming sense of joy, and I think she's done it. She's flying, and time seems to stop with her glittering in the air like a beautiful bird. But then, time resumes, and the air doesn't hold her, And as she drops, there's a piercing sound splitting the darkness, and again, it takes me a long time to realize it's me screaming. Ghosts and heaven. An hour and a half later, I'm parked in Lindsay's driveway, and the two of us are watching the rain turn to snow, watching the world go quiet as, in a moment, thousands of raindrops seem to freeze in the air and come drifting silently to earth. I've already dropped off Elodie and Allie. On the way home from the party, nobody spoke. Elodie leaned back against the seat, pretending to sleep, but at one point I glanced in the rearview mirror and saw the glitter of her eyes, watching me.
Jesus. What a night.
Lindsay leans her forehead on the window.
So crazy, you know? I never would have thought. I mean, she was obviously screwed up, but I didn't ever think she would.
She shivers, shoots a look at me.
And you were there.
When the police came and the ambulances, followed by all the people at Kent's party, drifting through the woods, quiet, suddenly sober, attracted by the sound of the sirens like moths to a flame. They found me standing by the side of the road, still staring. I'd even been interviewed by a female police officer with a big mole exactly at the point of her chin, which I had focused on, like a single star in a dark sky, something to orient me.
Was she drunk?
No.
Was she on anything else? Don't be afraid to tell me.
No, at least, I don't think so.
Lindsay licks her lips, fidgets her hands in her lap. And she didn't, like, say anything? She didn't explain?
It's the same thing the police officer asked me earlier. The final question, maybe the only one that matters.
Did she say anything to you, anything at all to give you a sense of how she was feeling, what she was thinking?
I don't think she was feeling much of anything.
To Lindsay, I say, I'm not sure it's the kind of thing you can explain.
She keeps pressing it.
But, I mean, she must have had problems, right? Stuff at home, right? People don't just do that.
I think of Juliet's cold, dark house, the TV shadows climbing the walls, the unknown couple in the hard silver frame.
I don't know,
I say.
I look at Lindsay, but she keeps her eyes averted.
I guess we'll never know. I feel a sense of emptiness so deep, it stops feeling like emptiness and starts feeling like relief. I imagine this is what it would be like to get carried off on a wave. This is what it would feel like in the moment that the thin, dark edge of shore ducks its head beyond the horizon, when you roll over and see only stars and sky and water folding in on you like an embrace, when you spread your arms and think, okay,
thanks for dropping me off.
Lindsay puts her hand on the door handle but makes no further motion to get out.
Are you sure you're gonna be okay?
I'll be okay. I watch patterns of snow coming down at an angle as though flowing, cresting, breaking on a massive current, a tide that leaves the world glittering. It's beautiful. All I can think is that it's the first of many things Juliet won't see. Lindsay is chewing on a nail, a habit she's always claimed to have kicked in third grade. The automatic garage light has clicked on and her features are all dark. Lindsay? She jumps like we've been silent for hours and she's shocked to see me still in the car.
What?
Remember that time in Rosalita's? After you came back from New York, when I walked in on you in the bathroom? She turns to stare at me, not saying anything. Her eyes are a deeper dark than the rest of her face, two spots of total blackness. Was that really the only time? I ask. She hesitates for just a second.
Of course it was,
she says, but her voice is a whisper, and I know she's lying. And now I realize Lindsay's not fearless. She's terrified. She's terrified that people will find out she's faking, bullshitting her way through life, pretending to have everything together when really she's just floundering like the rest of us. Lindsay, who will bite at you if you even look in her direction the wrong way, like one of those tiny attack dogs that are always barking and snapping in the air before they're jerked backward on the chains that keep them in one place. Millions of individual snowflakes spinning and twirling and looking all together like rolling waves of white. I wonder if it's true that they're all different. Juliet told me. I lean back against the headrest and squint so that everything disappears but the whiteness. About the Girl Scout trip, when you were in fifth grade, when you were still friends. Lindsay's still not saying anything, but I can feel her trembling a little next to me. She told me it was really you who, you know.
And you believed her?
Lindsay says quickly, but she does it automatically, dully, as though she doesn't expect it to do any good. I ignore her. Remember how everybody used to call her Mellow Yellow after that? I open my eyes and look at her. Why did you tell everyone it was her? I mean, in the moment, okay, I get it. You were scared, you were embarrassed, but afterward? Why did you tell everyone? Why did you spread it? Lindsay's shaking is getting worse now, and for a second I think she won't answer or she'll lie. But her voice is steady when she speaks. Steady. And filled with something I don't recognize. Regret, maybe.
I always thought it wouldn't last.
She sounds as if it still amazes her after all these years.
I thought eventually she'd tell everybody what really happened. That she would stick up for herself, you know?
Her voice breaks a little, a note of hysteria creeping in.
Why didn't she ever stick up for herself? Not once. She just took it. Why?
I think of all the years that Lindsay's been holding on to this secret knowledge, this secret self who cried every night and scrubbed pillows clean of pee, the scariest secret of all, the past we're trying to forget. And I think of all the times I sat in squirming silence, terrified I would say or do the wrong thing, terrified the dorky, lanky, horseback-riding loser inside me would rise up and swallow the new me, like a snake feasting on something. How I cleared the shelves of my trophies and dumped my beanbag chair and learned how to dress and never ate the hot lunch and, above all, learned to stay away from the people who would drag me down and carry me back to that place. People like Juliet Sykes. People like Kent. Lindsay rouses herself and pops the door open. I cut the engine and get out of the car with her, throwing the keys over the roof. She catches them in one hand. Headlights flare to life, and I turn, squinting, holding up a hand in the general direction of the car idling behind me. I mouth, 2 minutes. Lindsay nods toward Kent, who is parked behind us, waiting to drive me home.
You're sure you're all good? To get home and everything, I mean.
I'm sure, I say. Despite everything that has happened tonight, the thought of sitting next to Kent for a whole 12 minutes on the way to my house fills me with warmth. Even though I know it's not right, even if I know somewhere deep inside me that it won't work out, that it can't work out for me with anyone anymore. Lindsay opens her mouth and closes it. I can tell she wants to ask about Kent but thinks better of it. She starts to walk up toward the house, hesitates, and turns.
Sam?
Yeah?
I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry about everything.
She wants me to tell her it's okay. She needs me to tell her that. I can't, though. Instead, I say quietly, people would like you anyway, Linz. I don't say, if you stopped pretending so much, but I know she understands. We'd still love you no matter what. She balls up her fists and squeezes out,
thanks.
Then she turns and heads up to the house. For a second, the light falling on her face makes her skin look wet, but I'm not sure whether she's crying or whether it's the snow.
Kent leans over and opens the door for me, and I slide in. We back away from Lindsay's house and turn onto the main road in silence. He drives slowly, carefully, twin funnels of snow lit up by the headlights, both hands resting lightly on the steering wheel. There's so much I want to say to him, but I can't bring myself to speak. I'm tired and my head hurts, and I just want to enjoy the fact that there's only a few inches separating our arms. The fact that his car smells like cinnamon. The fact that he has the heat on high for me. It makes me feel drowsy and heavy in my limbs, even as my insides are alive and fluttering and 100% aware of him, so close. As we get near my house, he slows down so we're barely crawling, and I'm hoping it's because he doesn't want the drive to end either. This is the moment for time to stop, right here, for space to yawn open and fall away like it does at the lip of a black hole, so that time can do its endless loops and keep us forever going forward into the snow. But no matter how slowly Kent goes, the car moves forward. Soon my street sign appears crookedly on the left, and then we're passing the darkened houses of my neighbors, and then we're at my house. Thanks for driving me home, I say, turning to him as he turns to me and says,
Are you sure you'll be okay?
We both laugh nervously. Kent pushes his bangs away from his eyes and they immediately flop back into place, making my stomach dip.
No problem, he says. It was my pleasure.
It was my pleasure. Only Kent could say it and make it not sound like something cheesy from an old movie. And my heart aches frantically for a second as I think of all the time I wasted. Seconds and hours spun out of my fingertips forever like snow into the dark. We sit for a minute. I'm desperate to say something, anything, so I don't have to get out of the car. But the words don't come, and the seconds run by. Finally, I blurt out, Everything tonight was awful except for this.
Except for what?
I tick my index finger once between us. You and me. Everything was awful except for this. A light comes on in his eyes.
Sam.
He says my name once, just breathes it. And I never knew that a single syllable could transform my whole body into a dancing, glowing thing. He reaches out suddenly and puts a warm hand on either side of my face, tracing my eyebrows, his thumb resting lightly for one single miraculous second on my bottom lip. I'm tasting cinnamon on his skin, and then he drops his hand and pulls away, looking embarrassed.
Sorry,
he mumbles. No, it's okay. My body is humming. He must be able to hear it. At the same time, it feels like my head is going to lift off from my shoulders.
It's just, God, it's so awful.
What's so awful? My body abruptly stops humming, and my stomach goes leaden. He's going to tell me he doesn't like me. He's going to tell me he sees through me again.
I mean, with everything that happened tonight, it's not the right time, and you're with Rob.
I'm not with Rob, I say quickly. Not anymore.
You're not?
He's staring at me so intensely, I can see the stripes of gold alternating with the green in his eyes like spokes of a wheel. I shake my head.
That's a good thing.
He's still staring at me like that. Like he's the first and last person who will ever stare at me.
Because...
His voice trails off and his eyes travel slowly down to my lips, and there's so much heat roaring through my body, I swear I'm going to pass out. Because, I prompt him, surprised I can still speak.
Because I'm sorry, but I can't help it, and I really need to kiss you right now.
He puts one hand behind my neck and pulls me toward him, and then we're kissing. His lips are soft and leave mine tingling. I close my eyes, and in the darkness behind them, I see beautiful, blooming things. Flowers spinning like snowflakes and hummingbirds beating the same rhythm as my heart.
I'm gone, lost, floating away into nothingness like I am in my dream, but this time it's a good feeling, like soaring, like being totally free. His other hand pushes my hair from my face, and I can feel the impression of his fingers everywhere that they touch, and I think of stars streaking through the sky and leaving burning trails behind them, and in that moment, however long it lasts, seconds, minutes, days, while he's saying my name into my mouth and I'm breathing into him, I realize this, right here, is the first and only time I've ever been kissed in my life. He pulls away too soon, still cupping my face. Wow, he says out of breath. Sorry, but wow. Yeah, the word catches in my throat. We stay there like that, staring at each other. And for once, I'm not feeling anxious or worried about what he's thinking. I'm just happy, held in his eyes. Buoyed up in a warm, bright place. I really like you, Sam, he says quietly. I always have. I like you too. Don't worry about tomorrow. Don't even think about it. I shut my eyes briefly, pushing away everything but this moment, his warm hands, those delicious green eyes, the lips. Come on. He leans forward and kisses my forehead once, gently. You're tired. You need to sleep. He gets out of the car and scoots around to the passenger side to open the door for me. The snow has begun to stick, a blanket over everything, blurring the edges of the world. Our footsteps are muffled as we make our way up the front path and onto the porch. My parents have left the porch light on, the only light in a dark house on a dark street, maybe the only light in the world. In its glow, the snow looks like falling stars. You have snow in your eyelashes. Kent traces a finger over my eyelids and over the bridge of my nose, making me shiver. And in your hair. A hand fluttering, the feel of fingertips, a cupped palm on my neck. Heaven. Kent. I wrap my fingers around the collar of his shirt. No matter how close he's standing, it isn't close enough. Are you ever afraid to go to sleep? Afraid of what comes next? He smiles a sad little smile, and I swear it's like he knows. Sometimes I'm afraid of what I'm leaving behind, he says. Then we're kissing again. Our bodies and mouths moving together so seamlessly, it's like we're not even kissing, just thinking about kissing, thinking about breathing, everything right and natural and unconscious and relaxed. A feeling not of trying, but of complete abandonment, letting go. And right then and there, the unthinkable and impossible happens. Time does stand still after all. Time and space recede and blast away like a universe expanding forever outward, leaving only darkness and the two of us on its periphery. Darkness and breathing and touch.